You know, I called myself a pragmatic progressive. I don't know what progressive means these days. That's a bad word for some people. It's a, you know, archaic word for others. But I'm like, at the end of the day, I'm pragmatic. And so, you know, I mean, trying to figure out what is the most practical way and the most efficient way to address the problems that people have.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to the Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. Whether you're listening on AM 1120 or our new FM signal 104.1 FM, I'm just glad you're here. Thanks for tuning in today. I love having local politicians on the show. I think it's a great opportunity to just get to know them a little bit better. And I'm very excited to talk to this week's guest. It is Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez from the 6th Ward. I really like Daniela. She is so practical. She is so pragmatic, as you heard in the clip that I chose to play before this interview. She's just got a lot of great ideas for the city of St. Louis, and she sees all of our potential, and I really, really appreciate that. So let's just jump straight into the interview. Please enjoy. I'm joined now by Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez from the 6th Ward. Daniela, thank you so much for joining me today. It's great to see you.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. And I haven't been in the studio before, so it's a nice little change.
Yeah, this is our little Studio C where most of the Rachel Zimmerman Show takes place, and we like it. It's fun. Like, it is fun for people who come down to KMOX who are normally in Studio B to come over here and be like, ooh, it's the kind of an expansion of the digs. I want to start by talking about the 6th Ward. I was talking with Dave Glover before this interview started, and I'm like, I think the 6th Ward is like one of the cool wards. Not to say any part of St. Louis City is like uncool, but Ward 6 is pretty awesome. Tell us about it.
Well, I'm not going to disagree. No, I think it's one of the best parts of the city. So if you think about it, the easiest way to think about it is we're basically Tower Grove Park is the heart of the ward. So we have all of Shaw neighborhood, which is where I live, all of Tower Grove South. So those are the two neighborhoods that are right alongside Tower Grove Park. Compton Heights, where that water tower is. Mm-hmm. And then I've got a little bit of Dutchtown. So we've got obviously the park. Part of my ward is half of South Grand, so the side where the Gelateria is, the side where Faux Grand is, the side near the park is also in the 6th Ward. We've got a lot of different shops and places to eat, so even on Morgan Ford, I know a lot of the, I'd say, soccer or football fans. Amsterdam Tavern is there, yeah. So that's always a fun spot. And it just, it's a really, I think, I would say like it's a tight-knit community. I mean, you know, what I love about it is that neighbors, a lot of neighbors know their neighbors. A lot of people pitch in to help businesses, support businesses. And one of the good things is that the ward is really engaged. So up until this past election, when I was elected, before the switch, the former 8th Ward and the former 15th Ward, so Shaw and Tower Grove South, had some of the highest voter turnout. So the people in the 6th Ward, they usually know what's happening. Sometimes they even know what's happening before I do. I'll get a call and say, hey, I was watching this random board hearing, and what do you think about this? So I think that's what makes it really cool. A lot of people who are committed to the neighborhood and committed to the city, but also committed to their neighbors.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned all the cool places to like eat and go out. I had Damn Fine Hand Pies on the show
yes.
in the Shaw neighborhood. Madeline and Jean came down. One of the most incredible places to eat in the city. And I just had to give them a
No, absolutely. Yeah. No, and they're on what I love seeing is even when it's like a cool day or even like in the winter months, you would see a line out on Saturday or just any morning for people waiting to get their Damn Fine Ham Pies. Yeah, I mean, I can't even, I don't want to, so if I forget restaurants or places of business, please, please don't hold it against me. But yeah, we've got that one. I know Sweetheart is moving to the Foundry, but Sweetheart was a big part mm-hmm. of the neighborhood. Fiddlehead Fern, I'm going to forget so many. some of the cool bookstores, like we've got, now I am going to forget. There's a couple of bookstores right on Grand too. So like there's just really great, you know, really great local businesses.
Absolutely. So we've talked about like all these
Dunaway
cool things.
Books. That's it. And then there's another cool little store that opened up that I can't remember. But yes,
we've talked about like all of these cool things about Ward 6. But what are some of the challenges that the 6th Ward faces that people might not realize?
Sure. Well, I think some of the challenges that the ward faces are really challenges that the city faces, right? So we've had issues with vacant buildings and vacancy, and that's, you know, we can maybe talk later about that, but I've passed some legislation around that. And while they may not be in the same numbers as other parts of the city, certainly dealing with vacancy or vacant buildings, one vacant building can disrupt, you know, the quality of life of a whole block. Another challenge I think that we've been talking about is how do you balance, you know, population decline in the city? So, I mean, some of the same challenges I think that we still have there. It's a little less in Shaw because it's a really than Shaw, but in the tower, in the whole ward, because it's a really hard neighborhood to get into. But that leads to another thing that's a challenge is affordable housing and housing in general. So prices have gone up significantly, which is great for property owners, but it's also hard for, you know, maybe folks who are senior citizens who might have a bigger tax bill. Mm-hmm. Also, the need for building affordable housing, that's a challenge. And we've certainly, I've seen that since I've been an alderperson. And we've got a new, for example, we've got a new building, a new apartment complex coming up where the Mount Olive Church used to be. And those are going to be apartments. And the developer was great and put in like affordable housing for families in one of the units. I made it a 2-bedroom unit. Those are challenges because people want to live in the neighborhood, and we don't want people to either get priced out. Mm-hmm. We know gentrification's happening, and you know we could probably have a whole hour, day long conversation about gentrification. But certainly, we want people who are in the neighborhood and who want to be in the neighborhood to stay in the neighborhood. So you know, challenges keeping them there, and then kind of the things we talked about: supporting small businesses and supporting economic growth. And those are all things that are happening in the ward, but are also happening across the city.
Let's talk a little bit more about vacancy. This is obviously something you're passionate about. So just kind of expand on that for me.
Sure. So, you know, I think one of the interesting things in running for office is that sometimes you know what you're going to do and then you're like, you don't know what you're going to do because you discover things along the way. So I, you know, didn't set out to address one of the vacancy as one of my top sort of issues. But it is one of those issues that really affects people's quality of life. And that's how it was brought to me. I work with one of the CDCs in the ward, Tower Grove CDC, which covers most of the ward, but also Botanical Heights and whatnot. And I've been working with the Vacancy Collaborative. But in November, I filed a bill that became Proposition V. The joke is it was not for me. It really wasn't. It was Prop V was for vacancy. But it would remove the $500 cap that was in the charter related to fines and fees for non-owner occupied vacant buildings. And I know that's a mouthful, but what we really want to do is we want to make sure that we weren't targeting those senior citizens who might be on a fixed income and who might have really expensive home repairs. We didn't want them to be punished. Okay. But we also saw that, hey, you know, you've got a vacant building in a hot neighborhood, and there are some, you know, I say Shaw, they're not just in Shaw, but Shaw is a good example. There was one right on Shaw that, you know, it's been there for vacant for 10, 12 years, and you can't tell when you're driving down Shaw, but if you drive down the alley, it's totally overgrown. And so what, you know, that doesn't help our economy or, you know, those small businesses or even those neighborhoods if we have vacant buildings that we can't get to a decision-making point faster than 10 years. And so the voters overwhelmingly voted in favor of it. It passed by like 79.4%, and the threshold for a charter amendment is 60%. So, you know, people wanted that to happen. And so then this session, myself, Alderman Browning of the 9th Ward, and Alderman Boyd of the 13th Ward filed and passed a suite of bills related to vacancy. Mine, Board Bill 170, added a fee, so half of the appraised fee or $30,000, whichever is more, for unpermitted demolitions, which is something that is happening, I'd say less in my ward, but across the city, right? And we don't, you know, that has a whole host of issues, and we need to hold somebody accountable when they say, oh, we don't know how that building just magically blew up and the bricks are in a very nice pile. Mm-hmm. And then we added a fee for unsecured board up, which again, I mean, that a building that's unsecured, that's vacant, you know, creates a bunch of problems. And then there are various parts of the other two bills that addressed and basically like adding special tax bills and being able to add those. And it's very wonky, but basically they're enforcement mechanisms. And so Prop V passed, and it basically let us be able to do more around vacancy because that $500 cap is, you know, it was clearly not an incentive for anybody to not, you know, mm-hmm. it was an incentive for people not to follow the law, really. And we want people to follow the law. That's what we're trying to do. So then these other slate of bills are really aimed at making sure that people who are flagrant bad and consistent bad actors know that we're not doing that anymore. And giving the city some teeth to get some enforcement by putting it on those tax bills or liens for those fines and fees. And it all sounds really kind of, again, like a little bit boring and a little wonky. But I mean, what we're really trying to do is preserve the quality of life for our residents. And so we know consistently that, you know, if you've got a vacant building, generally it is not good for the neighbors or the people mm-hmm. who live around it. And so that's what we're trying to stop.
You mentioned, like, it sounds wonky. It sounds, use the word boring, but I don't think so at all. But do you like kind of that puzzle that you have to figure out that politics is? Like, okay, so how do we take care of this? Well, we can make it to where if you have this pile of bricks outside, it's this, this, and this.
Yeah, I mean, yes. You know, maybe I'm a little bit of a stranger, maybe a little bit of a masochist that I like. I like to try and solve problems. But no, I mean, it's not fun to see what people are dealing with, but I think it is, I mean, I do get a sense of a satisfaction when, you know, you're able to solve a problem. I think one of the things that we had talked about is I was a journalist and, mm-hmm. you know, making that switch, and that was a long time ago. But I mean, in journalism, you like understanding the world around you and when you're looking at the world around you, there are inevitably problems. And then, you know, how do you raise people's awareness, kind of like you're doing now? And how do you, you know, fix that problem or try and fix it or make it better? And so, I mean, that's what I'm trying to do, you know, one vacancy bill at a time. And it is, I mean, some days it's not as fun, you know, some days it's, you know, difficult. And, you know, sometimes I think I always joke that sometimes like doing this job is kind of like picking up a rock and not realizing everything that's underneath and then putting it back. Because you don't really know how much things are interconnected. And, you know, one problem, it's like, you know, untangling a knot. And then you inevitably find, oh, there's six other things attached to this that probably also need to be dealt with. But when we can get something done, it is really exciting. And, you know, we can build on it, like, you know, Prop V and the vacancy bills. Because ultimately, folks have been trying to do this for years. And, I think we were, you know, people are ready to do it. And that's what that 79.4% showed. And so I'm just glad that they said yes and that they're moving forward and that we can, you know, hopefully make some change.
When we come back, I'm going to air part two of my interview with Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez. Welcome back to the Rachel Zimmerman Show. Here's part two of my conversation with Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez from the 6th Ward. You brought up, you know, your former career as a journalist. Tell me a little bit about that and kind of the transition from journalism to going into public service.
Yeah, I mean, so I went to the J School. I'm a graduate of the Missouri School of Journalism. I double majored in history and journalism, and I had one journalism professor tell me you always wanted to look at the genesis of how things happened, and then history is all about context, right? And not that we're going back into like the theoretical here, but you know, this job is a lot of context. You know, and understanding the genesis of things, right? So like, you know, Prop V, I'm going back to that. What I didn't realize before I filed it is that it failed three times before on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Kind of glad I didn't. But then you see sort of the context. Well, like, why didn't this pass? Or like, what are the issues? Or how, you know, how many, you know, why do we need to do this? And how did this start? And how did it fail last time so we can do it again, you know, better this time? And so for me, you know, I was a reporter. My first full-time reporting job was in Tallahassee, Florida. That's the capital of Florida. And I was what we call, you know, the cops reporter, but I was a public safety reporter. That was my beat. And certainly understanding how things work, building relationships. It's all part of what I'm talking to a journalist right here, what you do as a reporter. And so I really, you know, I enjoyed my time in Florida. I was at the Tampa Tribune or TBO.com after that. And, you know, Florida is a fun, wacky place. I had a colleague who said it's a sunny place for shady people, and I may not disagree. But, you know, just to, you know, it really helps you, because reporters intend, especially, you know, doing deadline reporting, you learn to work in crisis. Right. And you learn to think fast and you learn to, you know, how to like analyze a situation quickly. And to some degree, as an older person or older woman, that's what you have to learn how to do. You have to, you know, I mean, sometimes public meetings are nice and they applaud, and other times you get yelled at. Right. And people are upset. And, you know, like my job is, you know, it's not to be, that's also part of the job. And so getting able to see that and you know, experience, you know, thinking about, you know, social issues and what's happening, and not just from a book, but like, you know, what is a policy? What kind of a world does this policy create? And how does it actually affect people? You see it every day as a writer or as a reporter. And so those skills were, you know, transferable. I did some public relations and I did some other kinds of things, but I you know, I wouldn't trade my journalism education, like my newsroom time, for anything else, because I think it just, you know, it made me a better thinker and explorer.
And you also served as a consultant for the Ferguson Commission, is that correct?
I did.
How did that kind of shape the way you view public policy now, or did it?
Well, no, it definitely did. So I had started off, I moved back to St. Louis after leaving journalism in Florida in 2014, and I was a public relations consultant. So I helped kind of do all the public relations things, all the communication things for the commission after I began. And then I got my own contract to be the civic engagement specialist. And so, I mean, I think one thing that I think we all learned is that very first meeting was 7 hours. And that very first meeting kept the public comments at the end. And so one very quick lesson learned was always put the public comments at the beginning, which I think everybody learned very quickly. But I think you also saw, I mean, it was sort of that nexus of, you know, it was history, right? I mean, I'd say, you know, the reason Governor Nixon started that commission was to kind of go through the genesis. How did we get to this point, right? And there were, and what, you know, the commission uncovered or rediscovered or shared with a wider swath of people was that, you know, racial inequities have been plaguing, you know, have been a part of our region, you know, for decades, generations. And so certainly what happened to Michael Brown and what happened in that moment was not just that moment, but, you know, a series of lots of things and lots of conditions and lots of things that had happened in that led us as a community to that point. And so you saw people in real time, and they should be upset, and more people probably should have been upset. But you saw, you know, that reaction to how policy actually affects people's real lives. You saw it in real time, and you saw people trying to figure out a better way to do things in some uncomfortable situations, right? Because when you're talking about justice and you're talking about inequity, it's not always pleasant. And generally, if those things happen, it probably shouldn't be. It doesn't mean that people can't be respectful or nice, but I mean, these are things that are difficult, and they're generally, and communities have been dealing with them for a long time. And so sometimes, you know, when those groups of people come together who have experienced injustice, and people who are just discovering that this injustice exists for the first time, it's not always, you know, it's not always like happy or rose, and shouldn't be. So I think that definitely shaped me, and it shaped my perspective in seeing people kind of work through those problems. And it also helped me learn about St. Louis. I mean, I mentioned I was a history major, and one of the classes that changed my whole perspective was this class I took as a freshman. It was called History of the Black Freedom Movement by Dr. Carol Anderson, who I think is now at Emory. And we had a study, different cities. And one of the cities I was assigned to was the East St. Louis School District. We had to study school districts. So we had to study, I think Roxbury, Massachusetts, all these different disinvested school districts. And I had gone to public school my entire life. And I had never learned, you know, that I'd never learned about why we had a desegregation program in the public schools. I never learned that, you know, that it took until the 80s for the federal government to force St. Louis to say you have to integrate. And that's why we had a desegregation program. I went to Rockwood schools, K through 12. And so I didn't know that till college. Right. And so kind of being in the Ferguson, like seeing everything happen and being a part of this group, you know, and being part of the Ferguson Commission and knowing that, you know, my experiences were part of the, even not even as a person involved, but just my experience as a St. Louisan, shaped, were part of all this. Like, how could somebody who grew up in public schools not actually know, you know, why we had this program? Because nobody ever explained, you know, why we had a desegregation program. And I graduated, tell my age, in 2001, you know? So, you know, that's part of how we got there. And so, yeah, it definitely changed my perspective.
I'm talking with Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez. I feel like I'm doing this interview a little backwards. Usually I start by like, let's get to know you, but we've talked so much policy stuff. Let's back up a little bit and talk about you. So you're the first Latina to serve on the board of aldermen. Does that come with any pressure or with any, do you feel like the weight of that ever?
Well, I'm actually the first Latina to serve in the city of be elected in the city of St. Louis.
Wow.
So I think, you know, one of the things that came out through my campaign that was really important to me was being the first and not the last. You know, one of my missions in between kind of doing all this, you know, I don't say all the job stuff, but all the other, you know, sort of requisites of the job is to, you know, I don't want to be the only, and I don't want to be the last. Mm-hmm. So I hope that, you know, more Latinos, Latinas, run for office and win. So I won't be. And I think, you know, I mean, I think one of the things is you carry your culture wherever you go. And so, you know, I have a name that looks very ethnic. I mean, I will tell you, I've had times where people have, you know, told me, oh, well, you speak English really well. Or you, you know, do you have a green card? And, you know, it's like, well, you know, okay, Puerto Rico is part of the U.S. And yeah, you know, I do because I was a journalist. And so, you know, but I think that those experiences, why not pleasant, are also, you know, helpful to understand how other people who may not have the privileges or be able to sit at the tables I sit at. They're good reminders that that I do have that and that it is part of my responsibility to bring other people, you know, with me. So, you know, I hope that it is part of my mission to make sure I'm not the last.
Very nice. Ultimately, what is it that inspired you to get into public service?
So I had done sort of adjacent political work. I was obviously the Ferguson Commission. I was the former director of communications at the ACLU of Missouri. You know, so I've been kind of had one, you know, one foot in or a few toes or however you want to describe it. And, you know, I think like somebody asked me to run, my former alder person, you know, asked me if I would consider it. And, you know, what I found out, because I think it's important, is that it's not, my story was not uncommon for a lot of women, both women who are, you know, want to be in executive levels or want to be bosses or even run for offices, that usually you have to be asked and sometimes you have to be asked more than once. And so, you know, I was asked and I thought about it and I really, at that time I was working at Fleischman Hillard and I actually really liked my job and I liked the work I was doing. And, you know, it was a couple things. If, you know, I'd always complained about representation, about what are we doing? And if I didn't run, I couldn't complain about what was happening. So, I mean, that was really it. It was, if not me, then who? If not now, then when? And I thought I could do it and I thought I could make a difference. And I had this sort of broad set of experience I could bring to the board. And so I did, but I did have to be asked.
Who do you turn to in your life for advice, whether it's about life or whether it's about politics? Because we all need that sounding board, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And one thing I think I learned that if you had asked me before, you know, I'm almost on my 2-year mark over here, anniversary, is that it really does take a a village or a good group of people around you. I think that is one of the most important things. I do have that. So I have a wonderful partner, and he is my sounding board for, you know, life, for politics. We come from, he comes from a public affairs background and different stuff. But he's a great, you know, he's a great sounding board. And also, you know, he's compassionate and honest and will, you know, tell me the truth, even if it hurts or even when it doesn't hurt. And he, you know, kind of pushes me along. My sister, you know, she is also a really great sounding board. She's a little tough and she's a little tough because I'm a little bit taller than her, which may be hard for people to believe. But you know, she's bright, she's smart, and she always gives me good advice about politics and life. And honestly, like, I'm really lucky that my mom is, you know, still here with me. She just had her 78th birthday, and she's probably going to kill me for saying that. Her birthday was yesterday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. You know, may not be about politics, but, you know, it's always good to have mom in your corner.
It's good to hear that you talk to people, like you mentioned your partner said, will tell you the truth even when the truth hurts. I feel like a lot of people, when they get to a position of power in any capacity, they're like, well, just tell me, like, kind of just feed into the loop here, because you want to stay in like this positive state of mind or what have you. You don't really want to hear that negative feedback. I think it's really important that you are able to take in the unpleasantness and kind of internalize that and move forward. Like, that just shows strength on your part. I feel like a lot of people are just like, just tell me what I want to hear.
Thank you. I would say that's the journalist part, right? Because, I mean, it's all great if I think I'm the best person in the world. But if the actual world thinks I'm not doing a good job,
right.
I should know, you know? I mean, and I think feedback is critical, I mean, for anything. So, you know, he would not be my partner if he did not do that, but he does.
Stick around, because part three of my interview with Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez is up next. Thanks for listening to The Rachel Zimmerman Show. Now it's part three of my interview with Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez from the 6th Ward. So, speaking of communication, how do you communicate with your constituents? And how do you take their concerns into consideration while still balancing your own values? That's always something that fascinates me, is it's like, if I were a public figure, an elected official, it's like, I have what I believe. But then you have to kind of balance that with what the people who elected me agreed to. That must not always line up. So how do you balance that?
Sure. So I think we you know, maybe it was, I feel like we're talking about journalism a lot, back to the comms, you know, my comms background. I think we do try and communicate. So we have, one thing is that I wouldn't be able to communicate without my team. I have a really great staff, and we work together. I view, and I hope, I think they view, that we work together as a team. And even then, I think that we have an extended team. So I have an executive secretary. That is what he's called, our admin, Garrett. I have my legislative aide, Bree, and we work together as a team. We have a shared inbox at the board. So a lot of times when we're triaging constituent, or we're responding to constituent services, it typically goes to that shared inbox where our executive secretary can often respond first versus me being the bottleneck and having forward things to him. We also put out a newsletter. We're trying to do it twice a month. You know, sometimes we're not always perfect with that. I actually have a website for the ward. It's 6thwardstl.com, 6 with the TH. And so we try and have some basic information on there. And then, you know, I mean, it is a good question. I mean, I think, you know, I just try and stay true to my principles. And, you know, I feel like maybe everybody who's elected should be a journalist first. But part of it's listening, right? And part of it, I think, is being able to listen and be able to not be afraid to be wrong, or not be able to be open to information that maybe might change your perspective. And then, like, with the principles, I mean, you know, I called myself a pragmatic progressive. I don't know what progressive means these days. That's a bad word for some people. It's a, you know, archaic word for others. But I'm like, at the end of the day, I'm pragmatic. And so, you know, I mean, trying to figure out what is the most practical way and the most efficient way to address the problems that people have. And some of those are like systems, which is not always easy to address, but some of them are systems. And then some of them, you know, back to the practical side. I mean, I try and focus on the local piece as much as I can, because that's where I'm at. That's what I was elected to. It doesn't mean I don't have personal opinions about other things that are happening in the world or other sorts of policies. But my really my purview and the only thing I have, you know, real control over is what's happening locally. So, you know, where can I affect the most change locally? And again, that doesn't mean I don't have opinions about other things. But I try and kind of center the work that I do around those things. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and sometimes, you know, you're sometimes I think in this world, people want their local electeds to have opinions on national policy or international policy, which can be a little tricky sometimes because, you know, yes, I have opinions and I have beliefs and I have, you know, sometimes strong ones. And, you know, the people elected me to do these things that are very local. Mm-hmm. So I try and balance. That's how I try and balance things in my mind.
So speaking of very local, you have an idea for a city manager position in the city of St. Louis. Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, the genesis of that was really just sort of how do we address all these, you know, as a reporter, like you see these like constituent requests come in and well, there's a pattern. Some of these are like a pattern of like, you know, we're getting a lot of the same kind of requests. There's not necessarily a great way to resolve them. Or, you know, how can we do things differently? Or really, how can we be better? And if better means different, then okay. So that is really how the city manager idea started. I had, you know, been in this position, kind of seen what my community was saying. I've had the luxury of getting to know other council people in different cities and looking at different org charts. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, a lot of these cities that are doing really well and they're thriving, they all have this city manager. And a lot of these, you know, a lot of the data is out there and a lot of like, you know, it's easier to get, you know, some of the resolutions that my constituents are asking for. Maybe this could work here. So I decided to file a bill, which is a charter change to create a city manager, a department or office of city manager, which would that position. And as it works in other cities is really like the operations, I'd say guru, but they're like the chief operations officer. They are the ones tasked with, you know, the nitty gritty of, what's the best way, you know, to pick up refuse? What's the best kind of, you know, snowplow? What are the best like planning practices? And that's what they do. And then they stick around. Ideally, they'd stick around for more than one mayoral administration, which, you know, in my mind and just kind of seeing how it works in different cities would address some of the consistent complaints that we hear. Because, you know, in a way, you know, we work as a team and we're trying to do all these things. But I can only do so much because I think there's a wider sort of systems issue. Again, I know that sounds, maybe it doesn't sound wonky and boring to you, but I mean, I think it's part of a systems problem. I don't think it's maliciousness. I think there's just a structure and a system that really wasn't, it's not modern. It's not easy to get things done. And if we're going to be competitive and grow and thrive, we need to be a city that does that. Or at least the way I see it, if government's not working, so let me kind of back up here. I want people to know about the structure of government and I want people to know why things are the way they are. But ideally, if government's really working, they shouldn't notice anything, mm-hmm. right? And so I think we're having these conversations about government structure, which we need to have to create that change. But ideally, one day we'll get to a place where nobody will be talking about charter reform all the time because government will just be working.
Last question for you, Daniela. If we get to that place where, yeah, government is just working in the city of St. Louis, like what is your ultimate, like, oh, I would just love to see that happen. I would love to see this move in here. What would you like to see come of that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see a thriving urban city. I mean, we're a city. We're not, you know, I'm not knocking the suburbs. I grew up in the suburbs. But if you go to places that are great cities, you know, you go to Chicago, you go to DC, there are places that people are walking around. There are places that people are, you know, grabbing spots at a restaurant. There are places with public transit that make sense. You know, I asked my partner, actually somebody asked me to ask my partner, what is one of the best things, what would make St. Louis really great? And he's like, a thriving riverfront. You know, like DC, all these cities that we like. I lived in Tampa at one point. They redid their Riverwalk. You know, they have these places where people are just out and about, and everybody's kind of partaking in local business, and it's not something as like thought out as, oh, we're going to go help local business today. We're going to go hang out at this place that we really like. We're going to go to that restaurant that we really enjoy the food. We'll maybe stop at the store and pick up or like pick up something at this boutique. And that's just life. And so that's what I would like to see St. Louis be.
Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez, thank you so much for joining me. This has been a great conversation.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, guys, thanks for listening to The Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. We are now on 104.1 FM. Of course, we still have the AM signal, 1120 AM, which we will always have. You know, a couple people, more than a couple people, have reached out online and stuff and said, like, I need that AM signal. That's how I listen to you guys. We totally understand. There are no plans for that AM signal to ever go away. Now we just have this nice FM signal on top of it, which is great for me. I live in the city, and the FM signal is just more clear and robust in the St. Louis area. But I understand once you move away from the St. Louis area, that AM signal is going to still bring you KMOX. Appreciate everyone who listens to the show. I would love it if you followed me on social media. My Twitter handle, my X handle, I should say, is at RachelZSTL. And my Instagram is at Rachel Zimmerman Show. You can also follow my personal Instagram at RachelZSTL, but at Rachel Zimmerman Show is where we post little clips and little previews of people who are coming up on the show that week and other stuff. Like this week, I did a poll of, you know, what do you like on your ballpark hot dog? And I was heartened to see that the number one answer was the correct answer, which is mustard. So thank you to everyone who voted in that poll. We narrowly beat ketchup, which you shouldn't put on your hot dog. But, you know, I still appreciate everyone who answered the poll. Sorry, I am a little bit of a ketchup on hot dog hater. If you have a issue with that, talk to me on social media. Again, at Rachel ZSTL, at Rachel Zimmerman Show on Instagram. Thank you again to Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez for joining me this week. I thought she was a great interview. We got to know her a little bit better. If you missed any part of the interview, you can podcast the show on the Odyssey app or anywhere else you get your podcasts. Just search for The Rachel Zimmerman Show. Okay, guys, I'm running out of time, so it's time to say goodbye. I hope you have an amazing weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.